with me is the wonderful, very talented, beautiful actress, award-winning actress, might I say, multiple awards she has won for her wonderful prowess as a thespian. Her name is Ernestine Phillips. You know that her grandmama name gave her that name. She is beautiful. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's good to hear your voice.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, to tell you the truth, my father's name was Ernest, so they didn't want to think it too hard.
I knew that. Look, I met a girl named Charlesetta, and I'm like, really? You did think if they put a steen or an A on it, or I was named after my daddy, too.
So, I have an aunt named Charlesetta. It's a Southern thing. You know, I'm from Texas, Dallas, Texas, so it's a Southern thing.
You know what? And I love you for it. I love you for it. And you guys do these wonderful plays. And
oh, my God, this season, Mother Love. Mother Love.
Oh, my God, it's
if you ever, look,
I'm coming.
First of all, let me thank you. Let me thank you for every year inviting us on your show. And no matter where you go, we're going to find you and be on your show. Thank you so much.
I'm a little offended because I thought we was family, and family is the one that you look out for, and you know, to open up the door for. So when you say, "Girl, we're doing a play," I'm like, "Okay, come on, let's go." You know, you could tell me you was gonna be selling bologna sandwiches on the street, and you need to let the people know you got somewhere to be with me.
I am honored. You are always you are our guest. Until the place, I don't know, fall, whatever, the earth ends, whatever, you are, I guess, to come up to Theatricum. This season is off the chain because Ellen Gear, the genius of Ellen Gear, is totally addressing the social issues that are happening in our country today with these productions.
It is a wonderful thing because she is being brave and bold enough to bring this to the forefront again, because this is a play from the 1950s, and people, we are still fighting and dealing with the same crap, and it's just moving along. So to have a play, the play is called Trouble in Mind.
Alice Children pulls no punches on this thing, but carry on what you were going to say. This play speaks right to the heart of the matter. This Alice Childress, you were right. In 1955, she did not pull any punches whatsoever. It's the bravest thing for Ellen to do this play here in 2017 because it does not pull any punches whatsoever, and it's right in your face. You are educated and entertained at the same time.
Isn't that what life is supposed to be about?
That's
and
right.
And not pulling any punches. You know, they say you halfway got the problem solved when you acknowledge that there is a problem.
That's right. This country
refuses to acknowledge that there is a problem. They refuse to accept we still live in a racist, sexist, misogynistic, rapist culture in this country. Now,
and
what
it's
does
all
that
in
say?
This play.
And it's, I mean, and she like the kids say, she wasn't scared. She came. I mean, she talked about. Everything. I mean, we used to hear about this play, but this wasn't for the children. You know, my grandmother and them, they would hear about it, and because they would go with the Negroes and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we didn't understand this when Lorraine Hansberry came out with A Raisin in the Sun.
Right.
Okay, you know, every Negro child had to read that book. Even if you couldn't read, you had to learn how to read that book.
Right.
And I remember my grandmother and my great-grandmother saying, yeah, but that ain't what Alice did. Alice done that before. Alice ain't make it all pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Alice told us, and we were like, who the heck is Alice? We thought it was one of their friends. You know, they talked about these people like they were their next door neighbor. And, you know, that's how we got involved, you know, in the theater. And, you know, and it was part of history. It was just part of history. You know, they were trying to put it up under the rug and tell their story, you know, and you can't. My husband told me just yesterday that they could say whatever they want. They could do whatever they want. They can try to twist it around, but you cannot change the truth.
That's right.
You can't
that
change the truth.
That is absolutely right.
But let me ask you this. What drew you to this piece?
Well, I'm gonna give Ellen a lot of credit for this, because she picked this play for the season. It wasn't like the actors of color says, Ellen, you got to do this play. No. This is the kind of foresight that she has. She said she picked this play, and then she said, Ernestine, do you know about this play? You know what I'm saying? And we all got excited about it. This is an incredible play, because the thing about it, as you just said, these kind of situations are happening today. If you speak to many actors of color, they will say, you know, I was in this situation in my last play, or I was in this situation, you know what I mean? It is still relevant, it is still current, it is still going on, and it's just wonderful that we have this opportunity to pull this play off the shelf and to do it, because it couldn't be more relevant to what's happening today.
And until we get this notion of superiority among each other out of our psyche, out of our cultures, and the only people that are going to make that better is us. We have got to make it better. You know, we have become so dependent on what somebody else thinks about us rather than being authentic like Miss Childress was way back in the 50s. We're talking about we're in a whole nother century, Ernestine. And look at the crap.
It's incredible. When you think about it, this play was produced on Broadway in November the 3rd. 1955. Now, a few months, what can we say? A few weeks later, December the 1st, 1955, Rosa Parks refused to get out of her seat.
See, you know what? That's
all
what
this
they
going
think
on.
Right now. That's what they still think today. And they to this day, they think we have stepped out of our place. You know, you need to stay in your place. And this is the place we tell you that you're going to... Who the heck are you to tell me that what to do?
Well, see, that's why we want all of your audience. Theatricum.com. Come and see this play. We're running all the way until the end of September.
This is absolutely awesome. I cannot wait to bring my grandson.
Theatricum.com, yes. I mean, and once again, this is just one play. Our whole season is just full of plays like this. I mean,
now, I want you to tell people what sets the Theatricum back. I'm going to go mess it up. The Theatricum, what sets you apart from the other playhouses here in Los Angeles?
Because every play that we do, once again, you're going to be entertained because we have some of the best talent. My God,
our talent
is off the chain. But every play has a you're going to leave talking about it. It's a social issue. And now we basically do the classics. I mean, but we, you know, the European classics, because we're doing Merchant of Venice, you know, and Midsummer Night's Dream. But we also do the American classics, you know, also like Trouble in Mind, like Other Desert Cities, and Animal Farm. We're doing Animal Farm. And if anyone has read George Orwell's Animal Farm, we know what social issues are in that, and political issues that are in that particular piece. So our whole season is talking about justice, dignity, civil rights, etc. for everybody, you know, because, you know, there's so much of this type of hatred and alternative facts that are going on in our country right now with our administration. Our theater wants equal rights for everyone. That's why our company is so diverse, and that's what makes our company, I think, so great, because you see everyone's perspective here. And how universal this subject is. So you this type equal rights is for everybody, and so everyone diversity is represented in our theater at one time or the other, and that's what's so wonderful. You know, Will Geer, the Will Geer Theatricum Botanicum Theater, started by Will Geer, and Will Geer was everyone remembers him from Grandpa Walton's, but he was a fighter for equal rights and justice. Throughout his lifetime, I mean, he hooked up with Paul Robeson and Mal Bloor, and I mean, just everybody, and to cross his country fighting for equal rights, and that's why he got caught up in the whole McCarthyism situation in Hollywood, and they tried to destroy his career, but he and his family have always been out there in the forefront. You know, with the civil rights movement and fighting for equal rights, and that's why this theater is just absolutely extraordinary. A beautiful place. It's an outdoor theater surrounded by hills and trees, and this wonderful old globe type wooden stage. It's just a magical place that everyone should visit, because once you come, you have to return every season, because that's how fabulous it is in Topanga Canyon.
And it's in Topanga Canyon. The show, the play is called Trouble in Mind.
In Mind by Alice Childress. And she really lays it out. It is just, it's incredible. And I know you're going to speak to the other actors in the cast, so I'm going to let them talk.
Okay, but when they call in, I'll talk to them. But right now I'm talking to you.
That's right. Right. I mean, and it's incredible, incredible work. Of what this woman has put on the page,
she was in an era when people were starting to say, you know what, enough is enough. This mm-hmm. is just quite enough. You done burned down our cities. You're mad because we are smarter. You're mad. Why do we have to be twice as good, be the last one hired, the first one fired? And why don't we pool our resources? All the people who are saying, you know, we have lost a sense of civility in this country. You know, there's mm-hmm. just no sense. It's no sense of civility. It's always my way or the highway, and that's why this play is so important at this time. See, she was ahead of her time. She knew it.
Oh yeah, And another thing that she was adamant about, because I feel the same way, is that she said it's the actor's responsibility to make sure that they portray us in a honest and authentic way, that we do not sit back and not speak up. Do not let someone rewrite your history.
See, that's a compound word, and people got to understand the compound word. His story. Mm-hmm. And nobody can tell our story better than we can.
Exactly.
Nobody. They could say all this all day long, and I can write for this person. Not when you have a preconceived notion of what that person is supposed to be, how she is supposed to behave, how he is supposed to walk, what they are supposed to look like. So you can't give me that preconceived notion that you're gonna you can get inside my head. You just can't do it. You know, and people make an attempt mm-hmm. at it, but that's why it's important for us to hold on to our stories and make sure. Because I look at my grandchildren and the kids of their generation, that generation really might be the first colorblind generation in this country, because they could care less. They're like, what are y'all tripping about? Why are you doing all that? Okay, I mm-hmm. think that we have on the phone with us is this Max Lawrence.
The wonderful
yes,
Max Lawrence.
Yes, it is.
The wonderful Max Lawrence. How are
That's
you?
Right.
Welcome to the program. Max is another wonderful actor. He is always in the program. And what I've noted, I mean, you have some of the same, like, core actors, but people rotate in and out. And what I want to know is, for this play coming in, because you're in it. Ernestine, tell us about your character, and then Max, we'll talk about what drew you to the piece and who you play in it.
Well,
sure.
my, char- my character is Valletta, and she is one. She's been around a long, long time, and usually when she's in many of these like musicals, you know, and these stereotypical parts, she's played them all. She done played every maid, every this, every that, and she has been literally going along with the program. But in this particular piece, and I don't want to give too much away, but in this particular piece, this play has a lynching theme, and the play strongly suggests that she sends her son out to be lynched. And
okay,
it's just
that's
too
enough.
Much.
Don't say, oh, that's too much. That's too much.
That's all I'm going to say about that.
That's all I have to say about that. As Forrest Gump would say. So Max, tell us about your draw and how you feel about being in this piece, Troubled in Mind.
I mean, this piece is probably the most important piece that I have worked on in my professional stage career thus far, as far as what does it mean to be an artist, what does it mean to be a black artist, and how does that black artist go about telling a piece of his story and a piece of his history layered into some of the themes that are so important in this play about telling somebody's story with dignity, with truth. And it's been a wonderful process to explore. I've had to do a lot of personal reflection on, you know, my own young career and some of the moments that really stood out to me in my career when, you know, older actors or professors, or something.
Hey, wait, back it up with that older actors. We're not older. We're seasoned. We have
seasoned actors.
Wine gets old and money gets old. We don't get old. Older actors. You're going to make me come over there and cave that your head in on the left. Oh,
I know the
Let me explain. Let me explain. Actors who have a way of thinking that when they see a young black actor like myself and they say, oh, well, you can fit into this box or you can fit into this role. I don't think that you're capable of doing this or that. And moments when I've had to wrestle with that and say, no, I think I am capable of being more than what you're giving me here based on, you know, the way you have operated in the past or based on the work that you have done. I would like the opportunity for me to not be put into the box that you have preordained for me.
You said so pretty. Where were you in my career when they would say stupid stuff like that to me? I was like, okay, Mr. White Man, now see, you done lost what's left of your mind. I'm going to show you what this field negress will do now. Don't get me started. Ain't nobody scared of you. I'm like, really? And I would tell them all the time, first of all, let me explain something to you. My behind is too big to fit in a box, so just throw that out the window. You know, when they're going to tell me, well, you can't say that. I live in America. I got the right to free speech. And right now I'm getting ready to tell you, you can kiss what I twist and I don't mean my wrist. You will not be disrespectful to me and I will not tolerate your tone. And get up and walk out. They was like, did she just walk out of here? Because what Eleanor Roosevelt said, something to the effect of, we can only be, you know, somebody can only beat us down if we allow them to.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Never allow anybody to define, you know, who you are and what you stand for. Because if we don't stand for something, we're going to fall for any kind of crap they want to throw up under us. And to keep trying to tell people, you know, well, you know, you got on a pretty outfit. You got on a pretty outfit. You got on a pretty outfit, and you standing there with no clothes on like the emperor. You know, you'll start believing you really have on a pretty outfit.
Right.
Because you're not thinking for yourself. And when our creativity is not allowed to flourish and our history is not allowed to be spoken, it's up to us to get it out there. And that's why I love you guys and what you do. with the theater, with your passion, and with your activism. Because when you think about it, to be an actor, you have to be an activist.
Right. That's a nice way to look at it. Because you, well, you know, and especially being an actor of color.
Yes, and a mm-hmm. woman. Oh,
mm-hmm.
look,
and a woman. Yes.
Look, you're not supposed to be doing that. What are you doing? You want to make a movie? You want to be a director? What? You want to be? You want to own a business? I'm like, yeah. Why can't she do that? And then we buy into it. And we
right.
buy into it. Or maybe they're right. Maybe I can't, you know, go to college. But shut up. You don't go to college because you don't want to go to college. You don't want to get on stage because you don't want to get on stage. You don't want to make a difference because you're waiting. You're waiting for somebody else to do it. And that is why I love the passion that you guys have in your work, when you're talking about your work, and in just your everyday life. And you can tell just from the camaraderie, and just when we are in the presence of one another, you can just feel the energy right here on when we're talking, just like this.
Because absolutely,
Max, tell her a little bit about your character, because I mean, it's really his character is really really interesting. Go ahead.
So, I play the role of John. John is he's very new to the scene. He has a bit of naivete that he brings right onto the stage as soon as he walks in. The interesting thing about John is John is entering this career in the midst of all of this, what he sees as change. There are a couple of very famous events mentioned in the play, the Little Rock Nine,
mm-hmm.
being integrated into the Little Rock Central High School,
mm-hmm.
you know, for the first time. The Montgomery bus boycott is being mentioned. So he is living in the era as a young man, very young man, amidst all this change. And I think he enters truly believing that he is going to be this new, you know, this new generation entering this new era where things are going to be better. And it's that youth and that naivete that he comes with, and he immediately gets told, and, you know, we don't want to give too much away, he immediately gets told that, you know, all of this forward thinking is not necessarily the way to behave when it comes to the theater. There's a formula. We play certain parts. We do certain things when it comes to relating to the white producers and the white directors. That's not necessarily, you know, very forward. And so then he, you know, he's very new to the scene. He's trying to figure out what he can do to get ahead and to make a name for himself in this industry. And he becomes very compliant with
see, I don't know whether to be now. See, now I don't know if I want to be mad, glad, sad, or keep feeling like we being had. I don't know which one it is, and that's what.
Well, and that's the brilliant thing about
like
this play.
Mm-hmm.
It's the brilliant thing about this play is there will be moments in the show for you to feel each of those things, and sometimes several of those things simultaneously.
See,
it's truly brilliantly written.
Y'all going to be playing with people's emotions and people's thought processes, and a lot of them need to be played with, especially in this, you know, to understand that it is all right to be diverse. It is all right to uphold your culture, what you think, what you believe, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But don't be afraid to say it. You know,
right.
Alice Childress was unapologetically telling
the
story.
Yes.
She was unapologetically African American. Well, they were Negroes back then, so she would have been a Negro. And she and what our young people need to know, and this is across the board of young people, because the more we know about other cultures and other people's stories, the more we will find that we are more alike than we are not.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I feel sorry for the people who feel like they have to put somebody else down to puff themselves up, or put somebody else down to make themselves feel better. And
oh,
you know,
yeah, I mean, it's a form of. I just think it's a form of mental illness. I do. You know, white supremacy is mental illness to me. So yeah.
Okay,
I agree.
And I don't know why people, you know, don't want to face that. People mm-hmm. will not stand up. People, you know, they're terrified. They're saying, you know, I know a strong woman. I know a strong black woman. I know a strong, you know, I look at myself and my sisters and you and Constance and Iyanna Van Zandt and all of us, you know, Terry McMillan, I look at us as warrior queens because we mm-hmm. are direct descendants of a people that other people try to eliminate off the face of the planet.
Right.
And we are still standing. We
still
are
standing.
And they can't, if you look at the country right now, the only reason why we're going through all of this turmoil is because white people could not stand the fact that we had an eloquent, learned African American for president, two-time winner, President Barack Hussein Obama, just in case somebody might forget. And they can't, mm-hmm. how dare you Negroes rise to my level and above my level? Well, you didn't make the, come on, really? Really?
Right.
Really?
I mean, really.
The racism runs deep. And this is why this is so important, and especially coming from the arts, because artists are activists.
I'm telling you, this season, Ellen has it in. It's in every play. Of course, Midsummer Night's Dream. That's different. That's just our like, you know, our one that we have to have because it's such a beautiful place. But The Merchant of Venice, Animal Farm, Other Desert Cities, Trouble in Mind, all speaks to what you just said, and it is just, it's an incredible season. And that's why we want everyone to come out to Theatricum Botanicum Theater, and go to Theatricum.com and look us up. My God, you cannot miss this season. You cannot
tickets are not expensive at all, group. I'm telling you, they're not expensive at all. $15 to $38.50. Look, we just had to pay $40 to go see our own grandchild in a play. It was worth it, you know. And that's why I want to bring him, because he is in theater. He mm-hmm. is. He loves musical theater, and I want him to see, you know, what is going on. Because the more you can understand and stop sweeping this up under the rug, that we don't have a racist problem, we don't have a sexist problem, you know, then they're coming up with ageism. Now you can only be so, now they told us you had to retire at 65, but yet they elected a president that was 70 years old.
Right.
Okay, so now make up your mind which story you want to tell. Okay, which one is it? I can't keep up with the lies. You know,
right.
and then to find out that they are lying, I'm like, come on. And that's why I feel sorry for a lot of those people.
Right.
I have sympathy for them. I wish we could do something about it, but they won't acknowledge that they need some mental health. They won't acknowledge that this was put into them by other hateful, mean people to keep other people down. And then I think when a lot of the kids grow up and they find out that they were raised by racist and, you know, prejudiced people and very judgmental people, I think it ruins them. Either way, it really ruins them, because they feel like they got to get away from that hatred. They don't want that to be them, or they buy right into it, and it just keeps rolling along. So now, if we can keep the hatred rolling along, why can't we keep the love rolling along?
Absolutely right.
We got a lot of work to do, and we can. Hey, Constance is on with us, hey, sweetie pie.
Well,
how
hello.
Are you? Welcome to the program.
I was listening, trying to say anything.
Okay. No, you. I want you to say something. On the line with us now is the the very lovely, very talented Constance Jewel Lopez. She is a wonderful actress. She's one of the younger actresses and doing her thing.
Yes, younger. Just much younger.
Okay, you ain't got to rub it in. Look, I got a cold, Max. Here she go. See how they start with me, Max? See what they do, Ernestine? The young people. First Max done called
us. Well, thank you so much, Mother Love, for having me on. I really do appreciate that. And I always love being on your show. I mean, you know, we always have a riot when I come on. So I just want to say I appreciate you and what you do for the community, you know, period. And just thank you so much for that.
Listen, this is my job. This is what my assignment. This is what I have to do. I wasn't trying to do it, but God said, no, you go. I got something for you to do.
That's
so
right.
You just take your happy cell phone out there. And the work that you all are doing, I am so enamored with all of you and the talent that you have and the passion that you have. And the reason why we always have a good time is because you all are easily entertained. And I like that.
That's real good. I'm glad.
And y'all have drug Max into it. Y'all have drug Max into it.
No.
So now tell us about your character in Trouble in Mind by Alice Childers playing at the Theatricum Botanicum.
Yes, we opened this weekend late. But my character's name is Millie, and of course she's an actress. Millie is she is one of those people that it's very difficult for her to keep what's in her mind from coming out of her mouth. She does it a lot of the time. You know, she does it, but minimally. Like, she makes a lot of grunts and groans because that's her only way of not letting it just fly right on out. She's just over injustice, and everything is for her. It's right on the surface of just ready to just, you know, just go off on everybody about the state of things. And of course, you know, she's always super fabulous, and that's just her way of, I think, of masking what's really on the inside is to always look good on the outside. You know what I mean? So I love her. She's really great, and she's fun to be, because when I roll my eyes with Millie, I mean, you know, it might be Constance really in there, but I can just see Millie and get away with it.
She's fun and she's funny.
Say again?
I was going to ask, you know, as actors of color and, you know, doing live theater where, you know, you have to really literally leave it all on the floor every single time you hit that stage. As people of color, talk to me how you can, you know, put the character in there and not have your own feelings and thoughts about the injustices that we continue to suffer under in these times in the 21st century.
Well, I'll say as far as myself, and Millie goes, my character, really a lot of things that she feels that she's going through, I have lived that not long ago. The things that she's going through, I have lived through. So for me, it's really not difficult. I shouldn't say. A lot of times with Millie, I can just be. I don't really have to act as much as far as how she feels. You know, like the way she responds to the way she responds to things. It's different. It's not how I would respond to things, but how she feels a lot of the times is how I felt in past shows. But I had to just, you know, keep my mouth shut and think about my pension and you know, medical and dental and that kind of thing before I let loose. And I think, you know what I mean?
Think about
my brand
completely
as Constance Jewel Lopez. Yeah.
Right.
And I think that, but it is difficult sometimes to not bring your characters home. And I am one of those actors that I tend to sit in my character a lot when I'm doing it, because it just makes it, because a lot of my characters, not Millie in particular, but most of the characters I play tend to go through a lot of sorrow, and I have to kind of live in that sorrow in order for me to make it real, because I'm the kind of actor that really believes whatever it is I'm doing. You know what I mean? Like, when I'm in it,
you have to believe it first before you can sell it to anybody. When
that's
you don't
right.
believe,
so I kind of live with my character throughout the run of the show.
You know, and I'm always impressed with the actors who, like yourself, like all of you, go that extra mile, do that extra work, do that extra, you know, rehearsing, do that extra learning, and is not afraid to continue to keep learning. You know, you guys will act like, well, I know everything, so I know what to do, even though we do know everything and we do know what to do. But we also know how to, that we want to keep our pension. Now, Max, you and Constance, this is for both of you, and Max, mm-hmm. I want to start with you.
The
as
young
a younger mm-hmm. person and doing this, now, is this still set in 1955?
Okay, 1957.
Yeah, okay.
57. We do mention Little Rock and, in the late 50s. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now, here we are, 2017, a new century, 21st century, all these modern technological advances in medicine and science and, you know, the environment, and yet we're still dealing with this. What goes through
yes.
your mind when you, you know, as young people, you have been, look, I grew up in all of this, and, you know, I didn't mind sitting in the back of the bus because that's where the troublemakers were. Oh, no, I didn't just tell you that, did I? Okay, but nonetheless, you know, we were told, you know, you have to be a proper little Negro, you have to be this, you can't do
you're
that,
segregated.
You can't say this. Yeah, and I was like, wait a minute, that ain't what my mama said. My mama didn't mm-hmm. My mother used to tell us, you be black when it's convenient for you. You be mm-hmm. a girl when it's convenient for you, because that's what's, mm-hmm. what it's going to always be. They're going to always see black girl. So you go in with something that they don't know about you. And we mm-hmm. and tear that whole stereotype thing down. And we didn't know what that was.
And that's two of my favorite things, being black and being a woman. Good Lord.
Okay, listen. You know why God made us? Y'all know why God made us black men and women. Don't y'all know? You do know why, right? You know why?
Why?
You know why? Because he knew why? We could handle it.
All right.
Yeah, everybody can't handle it. Everybody, this whole black thing ain't for everybody. They can't handle it.
You are so right.
they cannot handle it. Why would?
Right.
How could you handle going, oh, I'm going to steal your culture, I'm going to steal your people, I'm going to steal your name, I'm going to steal your faith, and I'm going to tell you what to do, because that's too much. You too artistic. You too smart. Okay? And then we're going to tell you that all the Egyptians was white people. Okay, yeah,
mm-hmm.
right. Okay, and I'm supposed to believe that. Okay. I just look at them and just, oh, poor thing. It's just a sad commentary. But what do, mm-hmm. what do you guys see? You know, and how do you not get angry?
Well, you know, for me, because the older person,
seasoned,
Laura seasoned.
And this I say this. Constance probably heard it. I don't know if Max has heard this, but I say it all the time. When I'm faced with these kind of social issues, whether it's in a play or whatever, I always say, you know what? I grew up in segregation, and I'm still pissed about it.
I've heard you say that many times.
Willetta's character is like the woman that has written this for me. Alice Childress has written this for me. I mean, there is nothing Willetta is going through that I mm-hmm. haven't gone through. I mean,
in your personal life.
In personal life, in the theater life, all of it. Of having to, how do I address this white director when, how am I going to deal with this when this is a lie here?
And when they want to tell you how to be black, I remember I walked into an audition and the lady said to me, "Oh, you're just too black." And I said, "No,
right.
I'm not black at all." She was like, "Oh, yes, you are." I said, "No, I'm not. You see my shoes? My shoes are black. So that would make me burnt sienna. So maybe I'm too burnt sienna for you. Okay,
oh,
and I'm going to take my slap happy burnt sienna self right on out of here because you sound like a fool."
Yeah, because Miss Childress was way, I mean, she was, oh my God, I guess
Max
she was ahead of
the
her time.
Day in rehearsal.
So
Max
we
said
still
that she
was
the
same
Max?
Thing as Constance said.
Okay, so
Max, what did you say the other day?
I've always said, I mean, just looking at this material, I called her a prophet.
Yes, yes.
I said that, that her language here was very prophetic. And, I mean, as far as connecting my personal experience to John's, as I mentioned earlier, John is kind of sees himself on the cusp of this new era of equality, this new generation where everything was okay. I remember being a senior in college in 2008 when Barack Obama won the election for the first time, January of 2009 is the inauguration, and there was this sense from so many of my classmates, white, black, and otherwise, that, now we've made it. Mm-hmm. Now we are entering this new era, this new post-racial America. It's true equality across the board. We have made it. We have arrived. And I think that is a bit of the mindset that John is coming into the beginning of the play with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I knew that while absolutely there's immense historical and cultural significance in a black man making it into the White House, I was not necessarily fooled by that narrative that, we've arrived, we don't have any more to do. The struggle is over, the struggle is concluded. And I think that's what John has to learn over the course of this play. So that's the experience that I'm able to bring to that character.
Mm-hmm. And that's beautiful. His work is beautiful.
That's an excellent analogy. And, you know, we collectively, all of us must take our God-given gifts, and we have to, it's not what you go and get, it's what you bring back. You know, what kind of knowledge are you bringing back? What kind of peace are you bringing back to share with your community? Are you sharing the knowledge? Are you sharing the stories? You know, I get frustrated when I hear our young people, this is black people, Latino people, and, you know, especially like second generation Americans, you know, their grandparents, you know, came over here on the boat or whatever the situation was, snuck in the country, whatever. And now that doesn't affect me. Are you insane? That's like this administration is talking about it's no climate change. We ain't do nothing to the earth. Okay, even though the polar bears are sitting to die off and a 2 mile big giant chunk just fell off of the ice cap. And no, that's not global warming. Okay, you're right, fool. Keep on thinking like that's not going to affect them. Do you think
Mother Rob, what disturbs me the most is about this whole thing is when they do polls or whatever, and they say, 67% of people disagree with him, and 70% of people think he's crazy or whatever. I'm not worried about those people. I'm worried about the 30% and the 40% that agree. You know what I mean? Because that's to me, that's a big percentage.
I'm getting ready to put this phone down and run through this studio. That's what I'm getting ready to do. We know what we're talking about. We have to get, you ain't got to preach to the converted. We got to go get them crazy people that are, I mean, they sit up and right now will say, and they have no idea what his agenda is. They have no idea what the administration, what his cabinet's agenda is. It's just kill everything this black man succeeded at that we did not succeed at. He succeeded at getting health care for more Americans than any administration. He made sure that, look, he got one of the biggest terrorists. Did he not get him? Okay, so now, then he got health care. Then he said, you know, you a woman, you love a woman, you want to marry that woman, you're going to do that. Now, whose business is it of mine what you do behind closed doors and who you love?
That's true.
I'm scared of the people that don't love other people and who feel like they are not lovable because maybe they weren't loved. And that's the only thing that's really going to save us. And you guys are like putting this in the face of people. You guys are as fearless as the prophet. Did I just call her the prophet Alice Children? Well, see, Max, you started that.
Genius and a prophet. Because there are so many in this wonderful play, Trouble in Mind, that she, you know, she wrote this so long ago. I mean, she started writing it in 1953, you know, and by the time it, you know, we're set in 1957, and it's just the things that she wrote in there that we do still deal with today.
Mm-hmm.
It's so painful that I'm still dealing with something that was happening when my mother was in elementary school. You know what I mean?
Was a
child. I wasn't even a thought in her mind, and now it's like it's still going on today. It's still, and not just kind of going on a little bit, but really we're in the thick of it.
It's really truly affecting us.
And as actors, especially this play, because the play was in a play, it gives me as an actor the permission to really feel how I feel a lot of the times when I'm doing a lot of these shows, especially shows I find with predominantly African-American or any actors of color, because I've heard this from other actors of color that aren't black. When we're, a lot of times we're directed by somebody who is not black, like the play within a play is like, you know, this white guy and he's directing us and basically telling us how to be, how to feel, what to think. And missing the mark completely. Like, you do have, I did have a show where I did, where, you know, it was predominantly black actors, where the director, he really listened to us. And that's what wonderful I say about Ellen Gear at Will Gear's Theatrical Botanicum.
Yes.
She really pays attention to her actors of color.
She respects her actors.
But actors of color. And she really listens to what we have to say on the perspective. And if there's some history that is maybe lost or confused about, she asks all of us, hey, you know, what was going on at this time? Not just to be a director trying to get it out as a director, but like as a person, so she can know as the actors of color what we thought. She'll ask, this is just for the actors of color, because, you know, we have an experience that, of course, other people who aren't actors of color don't have. And she takes that and she goes with it. Like, in this idea, well, you know, some really black people didn't really do that back then. She'll go, oh, okay, well, then we're not going to do that. You know,
okay.
She respects us as actors and as actors of color, and she can. That's why I feel that she can handle directing something like this, because she does give us the respect as actors, as colleagues. So,
and see, you know, listen to what we have to say. But see, that's why you have to have your own stuff. It is not about us isolating ourselves from other cultures and other people. It is about taking our seat at the table that we belong at that family table. And not
she has an open seat at the table for us.
Right.
She offers an open seat at the table for us. And that's one thing that a lot of times we don't get to have. You know, because our job as actors is to bring forth the vision of the director.
This is why you can't wait for somebody else to do it. When you see a void, when you see a gap, when you see an injustice, it would behoove us, and we would be remiss in our duties if we do not, and when we do not, step into that gap. Okay,
I learned that well from Ernestine Phillips. I learned that from Ernestine. Ernestine always told me, you can't, it's what did you say, Ernestine, about it's our job to educate them?
That's right. You know, I you have to nip it in the bud. You have
early.
To educate. We owe it to our ancestors.
That's correct.
We owe it to ourselves. We owe it to the future.
Yes.
So we cannot let someone rewrite our history. I will not tolerate it.
Yes, ma'am.
For 1 minute. I will not tolerate that. And what I try to do is I have to stop and I have to educate and I have to insist.
But you know, when we don't insist, it's almost like
you always
can't complain. You don't insist, you know, you just get bulldozed over, and really you didn't even try to have a say. And some people, the thing is, I get it. Millie is afraid. She does not want to lose her job. She's afraid. So she doesn't want to say as much. Even all that eye rolling and noise making she does, in the end, she's going to do the safe thing, you know. And I find that's the major difference between Constance and Millie. Because Constance, thanks to Ernestine Phillips, since I've known her, look, when I first started, I used to be like, now I'm like, look, I have no time. I don't care if you don't like me. You know what I mean? Because this is, my name is going to be on this forever, and I have to respect myself, and my mother, may she rest in peace, needs to be proud of what her daughter accomplished in this world, and I'm not going to let you stop that because you are, you know, doing something that, having me do something I should not be doing.
And I'm not going to do it. It's like, you know, that's been my problem all my life. That's why I do talk radio, because I talk too much. And like you, my mother, they used to say, whatever come up, come out. Oh, don't tell that girl nothing, because if you tell her the story, first of all, she's going to give you all the facts, and then she's going to make you look stupid, because she's going to have you laughing. And I was like, oh, Lord. And I used to get mad with people when they would laugh, because I'm like, no, I'm serious. I'm trying to tell you something. I'm trying to. They said it's in the delivery. And so I never... Now I've learned to have a filter since I have grandchildren, and they'd be like, let me tell you what I would say. I'm like, oh, Lord, because, you know, your children and grandchildren will rat you out. They'll rat you out. And so I've always been the kind of person to speak up, even from a little girl. And, you know, when we were little girls, they used to tell us, you a child, stay in a child's place. And I would move, take two steps over to the left, or two steps to the right, or two steps forward. I never stepped backwards. And they were like, oh, yeah, she's a smart little redhead heifer. And I was like, is that a bad thing? You saying that, like, that's a bad thing.
And, well, let me just say this, because I don't, you know, a Gerald is supposed to call him, but he's probably got stuck at some, working somewhere. But, you know, Gerald Rivers is also in this production. So the gang's all here, if you know what I'm saying.
The gang's all there, and I mean, all the actors
yes.
A beautiful
They don't know what they've done. They don't know what they've done.
Right.
So I'm not sure if they have the full reality of putting us all together in the same place.
You know what?
That's right. They call it the trouble cast.
The troublemakers. Y'all got the right one. They picked the right ones. My question, and this is for all of you, and Maxwell, we'll start with you.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want people to walk away from Trouble in Mind?
Well, I mean, you all set me up so nicely just a couple minutes ago talking about speaking up and being heard, because for me personally, even more destructive than the people who are saying terrible things or saying mean things or putting others down are the people who say nothing at all.
Yes, sir.
The people who see something happening, who maybe have an opinion about it, but they're just going to keep it to themselves. They're not going to take any kind of stance on the issue. And what I hope that this play does, and what this whole season does, Ernestine mentioned that the entire season is full of conversation starters. People need to have conversations about these topics, about different ideologies in politics and how that's affecting different people, about
and not just screaming and hollering at each other and saying my way is the right way and your way is wrong. Sit down and even if you disagree, you know, be civil enough to agree to disagree. You don't have to be screaming, hollering, calling people all out their names and being rude and disrespectful. And then we look at the behavior see, back in our generation, back when we were growing up, could you even imagine Ernestine talking back to your teacher?
No.
Let alone your mama, daddy, your grandmother, and all these sisters and brothers.
But you know something, one thing I have to say is that sometimes you can't agree to disagree, because some things are so awful, I can't agree with you I can't agree to disagree with racism, and
I
cannot do that.
We have to sit at the table, and the first thing that we need to do as a people, as a culture, we need to sit our slap happy black African American Negro people of color, Afro set wearing, what dreadlock wearing, whatever you want to call yourself, we need to sit at the table together and and talk about our issues. The issues of having this whole color thing inside of our race. Oh, you light-skinned. And when they say light-skinned, I want to slap somebody. What kind of word is skinned? You all are thespians. You have command of the language. What is skinned? You know, he called it light-skinned. Oh, she dark-skinned. I'm still trying to find out the skinned part. I don't even understand my own people. We need to sit down to the table, and we have to start a new dialogue with our elders, with us, with our children, so that the future can be much brighter. I mean, just the other day, three or four teenagers, or four or five teenage boys out there smoking dope, saw a man walk into the pond and watched him drown and videotaped it and thought that was funny.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
I didn't know that.
It's awful. Oh, it's awful. These kids have no idea what our ancestors have gone through. They have no idea. They will refuse to understand about the transatlantic slave trade. Some of them can tell you more about the Holocaust than they could tell you about the slave trade.
But, you know, a lot of our parents, our generations, I mean, you know, of course we went to school and we learned that in school. And I was raised in Memphis, Tennessee. I moved to California when I was 14. But the Memphis, these schools were really good at the time where, you know, you had, like, you had black history in your schools. But I had black history at home. So a lot of times what it is that these little children, their parents are my age. And I feel like my generation is what's failing those kids because they're not telling them anything. They're not teaching these children anything. And you can only learn so much from school because you're going to learn what they want you to know. But when you got home, my mom and my dad were like, this is what went on. So when people are finding all this new information about Africans, African Americans, they're so shocked. I'm shocked that they're shocked because that's stuff I learned when I was 9. So I feel like our generation are letting those children down by not teaching them after getting home, but then they do have a different generation.
Not sharing those stories. You got generations, and these kids, their parents, they never see their parents read
or read the Bible.
They don't go to church. Yeah. You know, my mama worked 3 jobs with 6 kids, and my daddy was dead. And so to hear that excuse, we know people that have raised 10, 12, 15 kids off of a sharecropper's back, you know?
Wow.
So giving me that excuse about, oh, I got to work every day. I got to work every day. Well, if you got to work on a menial job, then you didn't take your dumb self to school to get an education so that you could be in control. Don't be sitting up here telling me, well, the teacher's stupid. The teacher got a degree and is getting a check. And if you can't learn from a stupid teacher, we got a problem. We
have to be there for the children to teach them when they get home as well.
But you can't teach what you don't know. And these young people, when they were having babies left and right, just dropping babies out of both draw legs, and here they come. You know, she's 16 and she got 2 babies and pregnant with a third one, and they got 3 different daddies. Somebody is not telling them what needs to be done. They just think, oh, well, they'll get it. They sit the kids in front of the TV. Now they give them an iPad. I got a rule in my house. When my grandkids come in, 30 minutes without them computers.
But you know what, Mother Love? One thing that happened during the Obama administration, the attendance of graduation from high school rose.
Went up.
The attendance in colleges rose. The attendance of graduating from college rose. I mean, so the climate during the Obama administration in regards to education took a huge boost, and so we have to acknowledge that because
and we have to continue it, and we have got to demand from our children excellence. We're not looking for perfection, but we are looking for excellence. You will go to school. You will go to college. You know, you're not going to be planning your funeral. Look, I'm going to plan your funeral because if you don't go, I'm going to kill you. You know, and that's what they need. Half of them need a whooping. Well, you know, I can chat with you guys all day long. I am so excited.
Oh,
I can't wait to see the piece. Tell people again when it starts, July the 29th. That's coming up this Saturday.
This Saturday at 7:30 p.m., and it's at the Wheel Gear Theatrical Attraction.
July 30th
is a Sunday.
July 29th is Saturday.
Oh, my God.
And that's the day we open. Yes, July 29th. And
I'm sorry.
We are at the Wheel Gear Theatrical Botanicum. The address is 1419 North Topanga Canyon Boulevard, Topanga, California, 90290. So please come and see us, and you can also check the website, www.theatricum.com. That's T-H-E-A-T-R-I-C-U-M.com.
It has been my pleasure. Ernestine Phillips, Max, oh my goodness, Max Lawrence, and the lovely and talented Constance Jewel Lopez. Give my love to Gerald Rivers and
thank
everybody
so
else on the set, and I cannot wait to see you. Can I come open at night and bring my son, my grandson?
Yes, you can. I will send you a text later. You can email me, and we're going to work.
Okay,
out.
And I want the good seats. I don't want the cheap seats. I want the good seats.
Now, you know you're going to be on the front row.
You know what? Every seat in there is a good seat. So know that we love you. May the universe continue to open up and conspire for all of you. You all's great success. Ernestine, thank you. Max,
right.
Thank you,
and if you, I'm looking
and
here.
Thank you, Mother Love.
Thank you so much.
You so
if
much.
Anyone's picked
thank
up one of our schedules in the library, yeah, they have us starting on July 30th, but we're really starting July 29th, as Max and Constance just said.
That's why we need the young people. That's why we need the young people, because you got to be able to help us with this. Look,
you have no idea how much I depend on Constance and Max.
Thank you so much. We love you all. Thank you. My pleasure. Have a great and beautiful day, all of you.
You
thank
too.
You so much. Okay. And we will be back.